This is Digital Story Podcast number 561, December 6, 2016. Today's theme is 8 software updates that you should know about. I'm Derek Story. Image editing is the other half of the creative process. We have one set of fleeting thoughts when we press the shutter button and record the composition. But later, on our computers, we have the opportunity to refine our vision. This week, I talk about the latest developments in that second part of the equation, imaging software. 8 software updates that you should know about. Well, it may have felt quiet on the software front, but actually November had a fair amount of activity, and that's spilling over into December. I'm going to cover 8 apps. Now, I'm going to tell you right now that all 8 of these apps are apps that I admire and I think are worthy of your attention. You're probably using at least one of them, if not more. And all of them have some sort of update going on. Now, the other thing, in addition to staying up to speed on the apps that you already have, then I also want to introduce you to the other apps that you might not be using because, as I said, all of these are very good. We're heading into 2017, and who knows, you may want to add a little spice to your image editing workflow. And if you don't, if you just want to stay with that worn-out, cozy set of slippers that you've been wearing all 2016, that's fine too. At least you'll know what's going on with the software that you have, okay? So let's start out with Capture One Pro 10. They had a full release, and this just happened. And it's interesting, even though it's a full release, most of the changes happen under the hood. I mean, the big deal with Capture One Pro 10 is the high-performance engine. They wanted it to run better. It runs on both Mac and Windows, and they wanted it to run better on both. Now, after using it for a bit, I tend to think that they achieved that goal. It does run very well on my Mac laptops. They also added a new 3-step sharpening tool, which I'm still learning about. I'll report more on it once I know a bit more about it. But it seems pretty cool, and in general, I'm very much in favor of 3-step sharpening. So I imagine I will like this. I was also happy to see that they added the RAW profile for the OMD EM1 Mark II. So finally, all those RAW files that have been sitting on my hard drive from Iceland, I can now look at them on my computer, and you know what? In Capture One Pro 10, they look fabulous. So this is fun for me. This is like going back to Iceland all over again, finally getting to see those RAW files from that new camera on Capture One Pro 10. Now, if you're a subscriber to Capture One Pro, this is no-brainer. I think you're automatically updated, and end of story, you just start enjoying the benefits. If you're not a subscriber and you have to pay for the update, I think it's a little trickier because, in all honesty, I think Capture One Pro 9 is just fine. And the only place that you're really going to notice a difference, unless you really want that 3-step sharpening tool, is the RAW profiles as they start to flow in for Capture One Pro 10. So you could probably get away with not upgrading right now. At some point, you will probably have to. And that's just the nature of that particular animal there, okay? So my bottom line on Capture One Pro 10, I think it's a very nice update. I give it a friendly thumbs up, but it's nothing to write home about, and it's definitely nothing where I start waving the banner and saying, you've got to convert now, those of you that haven't, because Capture One Pro 10 is so fantastic. It's a nice update. It proves that they're continuing to refine their application, and those of us that are already using it are happy about this because, well, it runs better. Let's go on to the next one. This one, as you know, has been my darling lately. I love this app, Luminar, and they have a new version, 1.0.2. So this is just a small dot update. It's a freebie, but they've done some really nice things. And if you're a MacBook Pro owner, guess what? You get Touch Bar support with this new version. Now, I'm not a MacBook Pro owner. I don't have the new one, the new Touch Bar one. But I can enjoy this other improvement that I think is really cool. They gave us the F key. Now, F stands for full screen, not anything else, all right? That would be kind of cool, though, right? Things are going really badly. You just hit the F key. And, you know, you just have this wave of relief afterwards for letting it all out of your system. No, it's not that. It's full screen. It works in the standalone version. So if you are working away on your image, you've got all the things going on, you got presets at the bottom, filters on the right, all that. Press the F key and you just go to this very nice full screen mode with the image on a dark background. It's lovely. And then once you have a chance to enjoy your handiwork for a minute, you hit the F key again and you go back and you have your workspace. So I really like that a lot. They've done other goodies. They've improved the highlight recovery. So that's nice. If you're a Lightroom user using the Luminar plugin with Lightroom, good news for you. That plugin works much better now. Personally, I use it most often as an editing extension for photos or in standalone version. So I have a link, by the way, to all these updates in the show notes. So you can go there. If you've been hearing me speak about Luminar and been hearing about other places, and you're finally ready to check it out yourself, then go to the show notes, click on the link, and take a look at it. I think it's really nice, and I'm using it in my teaching now, and I tell you, it's so much easier to teach students layers and localized adjustments and all that in Luminar than it is in Photoshop. So much easier, but yet, you know, the results are just as powerful. All right, Luminar 1.0.2, nice little update. Big thumbs up on this one. Photoshop CC 2017. This one is not exactly a barnstormer either, much like Capture One Pro 10, but you do have in-app searching now, so you can quickly search your Photoshop tools, panels, menus, Adobe stock assets, help content, and tutorials from within the app, using the new search panel that they say is right at your fingertips. Adobe's also touting better performance, plus improved Creative Cloud integration, including the management of your Creative Cloud assets. Photoshop is Mac and Windows. Now, I'm a Creative Cloud user, so this update is just a no-brainer for me. I'm just going to do it. I haven't done it yet, interestingly enough. I use Photoshop just for some very specific things, so it's not in my regular rotation, and I don't really care about the in-app searching or the better integration with Creative Cloud, to tell you the truth. I just wanted to do what I wanted to do when it's time to do it, okay? But if Photoshop is your main man, if it's your go-to app, then you probably want to do this update if you haven't done it already. Here's an app that I've written about, and I think is a real sleeper in the Mac app world. Actually, it's a real sleeper in the Mac, Windows, and even Linux world. It's Polar, P-O-L-A-R-R, Polar. Or I guess you can say Polar and just say, I don't know, why do they add the extra R? Do I say Polar? Do I do like a Steve Martin thing there? I don't know. I don't know what to do when they do things like that. You know, if they just had one R and say Polar and we'd be done with it, right? Anyway, however you say it, they have a big update, version 3.3.0. And this is terrific. It is already a terrific image editor. And what they did with 3.3.0 is that they added a text and shapes tool. That's right, you have text now. And I was testing this because it's one of the apps that I'm teaching in my latest Linda tutorials. I'm doing a whole new set on editing extensions, and Polar is in there with all the other ones. And the text tool is really cool. I really like it a lot. This app is affordable. It's only about $20. It runs on Mac and Windows. It has a great editing extension. So if you're a Photos for Mac OS user, The editing extension is right up there in the same class as Luminars, which I think is the other, you know, set the bar for editing extension. Well, Polar's not far behind Luminar, and it costs less. So I'm really high on it, and I think they did a nice job with 3.3.0. And again, it's P-L-L-A-R-R. Polar. I don't know. Next up on our list, DxO Optics Pro 10. Well, I got to tell you, hardly anything is happening with this app right now. They did release 10.5.4, and they fixed the NVIDIA WebDriver problem. And they've added new RAW profiles. This app runs on Mac and Windows. If you're a DxO Optics Pro user, especially if it's one of your main apps, I think the main thing that you're seeing these days are new RAW profiles. I imagine we'll see version 11 at some point, but right now they're just sort of cruising along with the RAW file updates, and that's about it with DxO Optics Pro 10. Now, in the world of editing extensions, they did do an update to DxO Optics Pro for Photos. I downloaded it and applied it. They gave us a new RAW profiles there, and it's running smoother than ever. My main interaction with DxO Optics Pro, even though I have the full standalone version, my main interaction these days is inside of Photos for macOS because it has lens corrections. Apple never gives us lens corrections. They didn't give it to us in iPhoto or Aperture, nor Photos. But as an editing extension, I have lens correction now with Optics Pro as an editing extension, and it's very seamless. So if I want to correct the distortion, let's say from my 14 to 42 millimeter easy lens on my Olympus, the pancake zoom, which does have a little distortion, I just open it up in the editing extension, fix the distortion, save it, and go about my work. It works really nice. I just love having it as part of my Photos workflow. So I'm a little bit more enthused about the editing extension version these days than the standalone, but the standalone is terrific. And I tell you, they have a heck of a RAW processing engine there, and they're continuing to add RAW profiles to it. And that's about it these days. We'll see what happens with version 11. Pixelmator 3.6. Now, on the other hand, this has been a substantial update. First of all, it's now fully compatible with macOS Sierra. Yay! Pixelmator runs only on the Mac platform. They also added Touch Bar support for MacBook Pro users. And one of the cool things they did is that they added tabs to more easily manage the different windows. So kind of like what we have in Photoshop, now we have tabs in Pixelmator. Pixelmator is a real darling in the Mac community. I mean, people, this one and then the one I'm going to talk about next, Affinity Photo, are two of the darlings among Mac folks that don't want to use, you know, the traditional image editing apps. They also added, check this out, Content Aware Smart Refine. You now have Content Aware in Pixelmator 3.6, and there's all sorts of stuff too. So I think this is another one of those apps that, you know, you can get for what, $50, I think, $49. Very full featured. They have two editing extensions. They have Retouch and Distort. They don't give you the whole Pixelmator shebang as an editing extension. Polar does, Luminar does, but Pixelmator doesn't. But they do give you two pretty handy editing extensions that come free with the app. But their app is very full-featured, and you know, now they're getting to the point where they're doing things like adding tabs and Content Aware. Pretty good stuff. I definitely give this update a thumbs up. There is some really big news from Affinity. And they're the makers of Affinity Photo. And Affinity Photo has enjoyed a really nice year on the Mac platform. It has definitely been seen as an alternative to Photoshop for Mac users. And now the big news is that it's coming to the Windows platform in March 2017. And what they say about this is, and I think it's pretty cool, even if you are exclusively a Mac user, we hope you agree that this is a positive step, with the Windows versions basically being replicas of what we've done on the Mac, including 100% file compatibility, which I think is huge. It should improve adoption and file sharing ability for everyone in the future. And importantly, we've done this with an entirely separate team of Windows developers, so it's not compromising progress on the Mac versions. As it happens, we've got a couple great updates to the Affinity Designer and Affinity Photo for you in the works right now. So if you want to sign up for the Windows version, you can get the beta right now, which is, I think, is kind of nice. And the real thing that jumped out at me about what Affinity is doing here is this idea of having this 100% file compatibility between the Mac and the Windows versions of the app. So this can be a real Photoshop challenger in the sense that not only does it have all these great tools, not only does it have a more modern UI, not only is it totally robust, but you can have a mixed work environment like you can with Photoshop, like you can with Lightroom, and have these files go back and forth. And I think that's pretty impressive. So if you're in a mixed environment or if you're a Windows user, I think you ought to take a look at the beta and see what this is all about, because these guys are up and coming and they're strong and they really know what they're doing, and their apps are performing quite well, both in the marketplace and on the computers themselves. I have Affinity Photo. It also has editing extensions, and they go a completely different route. They have 6 editing extensions. My favorite of the bunch, though, is Affinity Haze Removal, which I use with photos. I love the Haze Removal slider, and I have that thanks to Affinity in my photos environment, and it works so very, very well. And if you're a Lightroom user, you know exactly what I'm talking about. This is a cool adjuster to have. So anyway, I'm pretty excited about the work that Affinity Photo is doing. I'm thrilled to see them go to the Windows platform because I love those cross-platform apps. I just think they're the way to go. I think people should be able to use a Microsoft Surface or a MacBook Pro or whatever they want to use, and you know, to make them happy, to make them productive, and then have software that operates on all of those hardware devices is fantastic. And finally, Lightroom. Those guys have been busy too. Now, most of their announcements came earlier in November, but at the top of the list of what the Lightroom folks were doing was raw file development in Lightroom Mobile. And this was something that I was really excited about, and I wrote about, and I've tested, and I love it. I just love it. Being able to shoot raw files with my iPhone 6S and then develop them in Lightroom Mobile, and then have those files show up on my desktop version of Lightroom is just terrific. It's really well implemented, and the files look great. The images look fantastic. They also introduced Lightroom for Apple TV, which hasn't had the warmest of receptions, mainly because it doesn't do a whole lot. And a lot of people say, well, you know, I could just share my Lightroom app, you know, via Apple TV with my, you know, HD TV and have more functionality than the native app on Apple TV. And there's definitely some point to that. But the way that I look at it is that I think that app for Apple TV is going to continue to evolve. Think about Lightroom Mobile when it first came out. Think about anything when it first came out. And I think we should cut them a little slack and see what they do with the Apple TV app. And then the other thing that they did, for those of you using the iPad Pro, is they added a split view and slide over multitasking features while adjusting color, tone, brightness, and all that. That helps the iPad Pro compete with a Surface that already does those things pretty well. So anyway, Lightroom developers, good job. This is a nice update. It was a quiet update, other than I think they got a fair amount of press on the raw development for Lightroom Mobile, but again, they're continuing to chip away at their app. I think the one thing they need to do is what Capture One folks did with 10, which is really work on that processing engine and increase and improve the performance of their app. I think it's just getting a little bit slow. A lot of people complain about the speed of Lightroom on the desktop. At some point, I think they just need to say, hey, we're gonna rewrite this engine. But not quite yet. All right, so that is my roundup of what's going on with what I consider some of the best imaging software available to us. Hopefully I brought you up to speed on your app, and hopefully I tempted you with something new. In the news, Metz Mechablitz M400 compact wireless flash unit now available. And I think this is good news, especially for mirrorless shooters. German flash manufacturer Metz has launched a new compact size flash unit that offers wireless TTL control and coverage to match 24-105mm lenses. First announced at Photokina, the Metz Mechablitz M400 has a guide number of 40 meters, 131 feet at ISO 100 at the 105 zoom setting, along with a tilt and swivel head for bouncing the light. The gun is compatible with Canon, Fujifilm, Nikon, Micro Four Thirds, both Olympus and Panasonic, Pentax, and Sony. It's available now, and it costs $280. And this news story is compliments of DP Review. Thank you very much, guys. So the reason why I posted this is because I have the Nissan i40, which is a nice little flash. I wrote about it. I've had it for quite a while. But it's just not quite there in what I want, especially in terms of, you know, robust design. I mean, I have problems like in areas, some of the paint's wearing off for the settings. I mean, stuff like that that I just don't think should happen. And I've always had good luck with Metz. And I think it's a very high quality company. And $280, it's a little bit at the high end of what I want to spend on a flash. Although in the world of wireless flashes, definitely not outrageous. This flash looks good. I think it's going to be a solid performer. And, you know, being able to use it and not have it be so big that it pulls my Olympus and Panasonic cameras forward is pretty exciting. So this is something that I'm definitely looking at. If I do test it, I'll definitely write it up. I'm tempted. I really am tempted by this. All right, here's something fun. We got to do something fun. I have free signed copies of the Apple's Photos Book for Photographers. This is the one that just came out in print. I have 3 signed copies of the Apple Photos Book for Photographers, and I want to give them away next week on next week's show. So if you'd like to have a chance to have me send you one of these bad boys, all you have to do is tweet something to the effect that the book is now in print because it's been ebook for a while. Summer? Is it summer? This is when we release as an ebook. But the print copy is so much cooler. I mean, I cannot tell you how much cooler the print copy is. The paper is beautiful. The printing is fantastic. The images look great. It feels wonderful. It's a great size. The binding is terrific. I mean, maybe I'm just totally biased, not because I wrote the book, but because I do like paper books. But I'm really happy with this book. And I want you to have it in your hands, too. And I want other people to have it, too. So I'm thinking, well, you know, if you tweet about it, that the paper version is out and that you're excited about it, all you got to do is add the hashtag Apple Photos Book to your tweet. All one word, Apple Photos Book. All one word, hashtag. And then go ahead and send me an email. And the reason why I want you to do that, I want to have your email address so I can notify you. Right? Because, you know, if you tweet about it, I may or may not be able to track you down. This is a lot easier. So go ahead, tweet about it. Use the hashtag send me an email. Really, you could probably do this in 90 seconds. And then next Monday, what I'm going to do is I'm going to randomly pick three folks, and I already have your email because you sent it to me, and I'll announce your name and send you a notification via email, and then I'll get your shipping address and all that stuff. So let's do this, huh? Let's tweet about it. Let me send out some signed copies. At least three of you, I want to get this book in your hands. The book's available on Amazon right now, and it's on Rocky Nook, the publisher, and you can get it either place. It's cheaper on Amazon, as you would imagine, right? I'm not going to lie to you. It's cheaper on Amazon, and it's getting off to a good start. I'm happy about this, but I just want to spread the word. I just want people to know that this book is in print. And I think you can help me with that. And I really appreciate it. Updates. Let's see what's going on. Big thanks to all of our Patreon members. Speaking of appreciation, you're helping to keep the lights on. And I so appreciate it. And even more importantly, you're helping to keep the servers running. So all of you should appreciate that, right? Whether you're a Patreon member or not, those folks are helping keep this show on the air. If you want to learn more about Patreon, we've got a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story. The 2007 workshop season, I'm getting ready to send out reservation forms to the San Francisco workshop folks already. Yes, time marches on, doesn't it? So if you're not on the reserve list yet for the workshop that you want, make sure you go over to thedigitalstory.com, click on workshops, and then use the send me info form, three fields. It'll take you 15 seconds. Just your name and your email is all you need to do there, and let us know which workshop. Get on that reserve list, because before you know it, we're sending out reservation forms, and the workshops rarely go beyond the reserve list, all righty? And if you signed up via the semi-info form, if you should be on the reserve list and you haven't gotten a confirmation from me, then let me know, because I want to make sure that you get on there, all righty? B&H and Amazon tiles on The Digital Story. This time of year, when you're doing your shopping, if you would just go to thedigitalstory.com first, click on the Amazon tile or click on the B&H tile, that'll take you over to their sites, and then you can search and find what you want. Helps support our site, and it's a really important revenue stream, again, to take care of the costs associated with doing this show. And finally, last but never least, a big thank you to our friends over at Red River Paper, the makers of the fine art greeting card paper that I use to make a lot of people in my life happy. Hopefully you are printing fine art cards and prints for people that are important to you in your life. If you don't have the materials on hand right now, it's still not too late. Just go to any of the pages of The Digital Story. There's a tile there for Red River Paper. Take you over to our landing page. Get some fine art greeting card paper. Make some beautiful fine art cards and share them with people. Show off your work. Show people how good you are. They will appreciate it. And it's pretty nice for you too. Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. They have a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story, and they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Alrighty, that's going to do it for me this week. Software this week. Who knows what we'll talk about next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, have a great week. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye now.